This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 29 on the subject of Back to the Future, featuring Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and Mark Bosco.
With me, as always, is Matt. Say hello to the people, Matt. And our guest this week is Mark Bosco. I know him as Bob. A couple of people might also know him as Bob. He and I go really far back. We went to school together. We've been very good friends all these years. His son has the distinction of being the only reader of Matt's and my webcomic.
Indeed. So, he's very happy about that.
And... Bob now works in, how can I say this accurately? You work in TV production, you do what?
You know, TV stuff. I do like post-production for shows that like someone else goes out and shoots the videotapes or whatever, and then they come back and I help with the, you know, the whole process of editing and getting it to the network before they show it.
Right. And so it's
anything in that post area.
And we sort of grew up, you know, wanting to be, you know, like all dumb nerd kids wanting to be like filmmakers and stuff like that. And Bob now actually makes a living, you know, doing video effects and stuff like that, which is very cool. And he's worked on shows that you may have seen on the History Channel and what, National Geographic and...
Discovery, History Channel, yeah, Nat Geo, yeah, nice. That sort of thing.
For a while there, you were working on the number one rated show on History Channel, I know.
What was it called? I forget now. Digging for the Truth.
I didn't know. I don't know what the protocol is, mentioning names or whatever. I just was gonna.
Yeah. No, that's fine. They were very happy with it, and then the host left, and it just kind of fell apart after that. Because
right.
Well, you know, no host.
Yeah, that'll happen.
And as great as your sort of, you know, Indiana Jones style, like red lines across the map were, that just wasn't enough to carry the show, huh?
No, apparently not. I think that's actually what pushed it over the edge. When they got the new host, they also changed the maps, and that just totally destroyed their ratings.
Nah, gotta have that Indiana Jones.
That sucks. I would totally watch a half hour of just Indiana Jones maps. now he's heading to Kathmandu.
I didn't know where Kathmandu was.
Well, now you will after watching this show.
Yeah.
You can just watch my demo reel, and that's about what it is.
Yeah. Bob also regularly participates in the 48-hour film project. Is that correct?
Fairly regularly. Sure, yeah.
Well, I mean, in that I participate in the 24-hour comic book project. I haven't done it in the last few years, but the overall cumulative, you know, effort.
Yeah, I've done it several times, and we got to best of a couple of times. Actually, won the DC competition once. I was part of the team that did that, so I'm very proud of that.
I'm basically trying to establish your pedigree as being someone I can exploit. Is what I'm doing here. So
yeah, absolutely.
You have a degree of success.
I figured that's why you had me on here, because of my tens of followers on Twitter.
Well, yeah, exactly. Soon they will be our tens of followers.
Depending on how you behave, yes.
How I behave or how Matt behaves?
Oh, no, him. Oh. You're the guest. I'm only being mean to him. And actually,
yeah, exactly.
I'm sort of violating an off-air rule that we have that we won't just call each other douchebag for an hour, and I apologize for that. So,
and as well, you should.
Let's move on.
Oh.
All right.
I'm ready.
So, I believe that means I get to come and shoot you with a crossbow now.
It's true. It's true. As we previously established.
As was our agreement.
A gentleman's agreement.
Did you find the distributor of crossbows?
That's the one hole in this plan. I've yet to acquire a crossbow to shoot him with.
If you have any good crossbow shops up where you are, Bob, by all means.
Oh, I'm sure we do. This is like, you know, deer killing country.
Oh, that's true. You used to live sort of in a suburb of Washington, D.C., and now you're sort of out toward the mountains. Is that right?
Yeah, it's sort of a suburb. It's just, you know, an hour or 20 away.
Nah, that's no problem. You are on the train line that very famously, what did it, explode or ascend into space? It wasn't just like
a
derailment.
What?
The Red Line recently. Didn't something horrible happen like about a month ago?
Oh, yeah. There was a pretty bad accident, actually.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to
make
light
exactly
of anyone's injury or anything. I just
yeah. But no, I, no, no. It's But it that is a that, if I were to ride the Metro, that would be the line that I am most likely to be riding at any time.
Except now that it's ascended into space, you know, probably yeah. not so much.
It's yeah, they've got it back together, but yeah, that was a little creepy for a few days there.
No, I mentioned that, and again, I don't want to make light of any actual true disaster, but it was on the news, it was on the internet, and I looked, and it said like the worst disaster in recent history or something like that. And I turned to Amanda, I turned to my girlfriend, and I said, "Look, that's where my friend lives." And then I realized just
on that crash train.
Yeah, no, follow that line, and that's where Bob lives. And
very near it.
It was going to visit him.
Yeah, and then I realized how desensitized I've become. That yeah, I just saw it as an excuse to sort of, you know, show her how to find my friend on a map.
Well, we had a couple of years back, we were going to some Halloween party or something, and a train actually hit like a semi that was sort of like it was crossing. Wow. And, yeah, it just plows into it, knocks over a power line. There's big like just electricity flying everywhere, and we all look at each other and we're like, "We gotta call people and tell them what we saw."
Was it? Go ahead.
And as we're arriving at the Halloween party, we're like, you know, maybe we should have called 911 or something. You know, maybe let someone know.
Nah.
You guys won't believe what we saw.
They'll figure it out. 911 watches the internet, right? They keep up with the Twitter feeds, and they'll figure it out.
Hey, did you guys see this? Matt saw a train hit a semi. We better get over there.
Click on that twit pic. Wow, it looks pretty gruesome. We better better call.
Oh, there's
him.
Video.
Yeah. So, on that note, actually, the reason I brought you here, Bob. Well, not the reason, but.
What?
No, this isn't.
There's a reason?
No, I'm not pulling some kind of Jerry Springer, you know, suddenly I'm ambushing you thing. I'm segging, and we're very quickly establishing that I'm the worst segue artist in history.
And you know, that's one of my pet peeves on podcasts too, is like when people make a nice segue and then stop and say, "Hey, that was a pretty good segue."
Oh, I'm a great segue artist.
I would not do that. I only point out my failings. If I do well.
Oh, well, that's all right then.
Yeah.
If you do well, you just hope nobody noticed.
Yeah, exactly. Just don't call attention. Just move on. No, I'm sort of looking at the list of people we want to have on, and Bob is one of my oldest and closest friends, and you know, he's been on his own podcast. Is it correct to say your own podcast, or is it sort of a group effort, or?
Yeah, no, it is kind of mine, but it's kind of defunct at the moment. It's right.
You have podcasting
experience.
I tend
to like. Yeah, but I have high enthusiasm for things at first, and then it tends to wane over time. So there's, you know, like five episodes of several things that I've started and grown bored of.
Yeah, we're well familiar with that. With that thing.
So many projects like that. but no, the point being that you do have podcasting experience that that you are familiar with.
Yes,
always. Great. Now that's all I can think about is the French champagne.
I'm so sorry.
Nah, that's all right. I need a good segue. Here's what I need.
I think at this point it's like if you're gonna be on the show, you have to roll out your Wells impression.
It's true. That's why we laid out the very first one. Just played it all for you. And some people were like, "Well, why? Like, I've heard that. Why? We'll skip over it." A lot of people have.
Yeah.
But no, Bob, you have podcasting experience,
I have podcasting experience.
Yes. And on my list of people to bring in, I wanted it to be as smooth and like you and I have a chemistry, we have a history, and we mm-hmm. have a history. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yes. You know, we've known each other for a long time, and you're good at this podcasting thing.
You can tell by how smoothly this is going right
yes,
now.
Exactly.
Oh, heck yes.
I was going somewhere with it, and I'm trying to clear Orson Welles out of my head and stall, and it's not happening.
I'm not going anywhere, Al.
Right here. This is a lot of shit. You know that? That's what he's
yes,
saying.
Yes, we know.
No, I'm looking at. Okay, Bob should be an early list, and I'm saying what do Matt and I and Bob all have in common? And the first thing that comes to my mind is Back to the Future. We are nuts about this movie, and yes, it's talked about a lot, and yes, it may possibly go on the same list as Star Wars as over referenced. But then I got to thinking, I'm like, no, this is one of those. And we were talking about this before we got started. It's one of those that everyone loves and people kind of tend to forget that they love for a little while.
Yeah, I don't think for a second that Back to the Future is nearly as referenced as much as Star Wars.
Well, and like I said, that was
no, not at all.
My knee jerk was, you know, well, we ruled out Star Wars. Why would we talk about this? It's just kind of the same thing. But no, the more I thought about it, you're absolutely right.
I mean, I think maybe people would quote Ghostbusters more than Back to the Future, even.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's true. In fact, today, someone had, on a comic book message board, someone posted, shockingly, a picture of a chick in a, you know, revealing costume from a convention, which is very strange on a comic book message board.
Yeah.
But, you know, is of the sexy Ghostbuster variety. And of course, we're all
there is actually a pre-made sexy Ghostbusters costume that you can buy off the shelf now.
Oh, that's much less impressive.
Oh, yeah, I saw that with the ridiculous inflatable proton pack.
Oh,
yes.
Well, I have much less respect for this chick now.
Yeah, they have the they have the guy version of that, too, which I was looking at for Halloween a couple of years back. Just sort of, this is really
sexy guy awful.
And, yeah.
Is that what you said?
I did not say sexy guy brush.
I am trying to...
I mean, because I would think Guybrush Threepwood would be much lower on the quotability scale.
Well, I don't know. Look at his beard.
Great Halloween costume, though.
It's true, and not a lot of people would recognize that.
People, yeah, exactly.
But no, we saw this on this message where we saw this sort of sexy Ghostbuster, and she was still, like, attractive on her own, so it wasn't just the costume. And, of course, we're all racing to do our best, you know, like, I'd cross the streams for her, I'd step on a church in her town. God,
no. Basically a lot of slime references.
Yeah, no, that was mine though. I'd step on a church in her town. I was struggling
because
I knew everyone would go with like I'm the keymaster, and so. But even still, Ghostbusters is definitely one of those movies. But somehow Back to the Future isn't, and that's great because it's just as great. Like it's
now. Are you saying that means you want to see a girl in a sexy Doc Brown outfit? Because
no,
I would totally go for that.
That would be awesome.
With the freight wig and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, all right. I you guys convinced me. Like my initial reaction was no, but you both swayed me with that argument there.
Sexy Marty McFly with a life preserver.
Isaac Coast Guard. But no, Bob and I.
It's the Junior Coast Guard of America. Thank you.
Bob and I years ago bonded. I think this might be how we first met, or one of the very early things where we realized we were sort of on the same wavelength is the fact that we could both quote this movie verbatim. You know, even the obscure line. You know, kind of like what I was saying before with Star Wars. Even the little like background noises and just all of it, we both had, and we could. We'd be sitting in like the new. We were both on the school paper, sitting in the newspaper room, and just quote lines back and forth for half an hour. And actually, Bob has. Bob gave me the greatest gift. This isn't hyperbole. This is absolutely true. The greatest gift I've ever received from a person, like an individual person. I think it might have been my 30th birthday. He gave me a pocket watch inscribed with, and of course, this is a testament to how great a gift it was. Now I don't remember what it says, but the gist of it was, it said, "Your friend in time, Mark Bob Bosco." And it was just like, aww.
That's pretty awesome.
It was a nice, like a quality pocket watch, and he had it specially inscribed, and it was really sweet. And it was like, yeah, that's Back to the Future's our thing. Yeah.
And that's so great. I didn't realize you held that gift in such high regard.
It's right here. Like it's, I don't want to make a bunch of noise banging around to take it out, but it's right here in my, like,
this is the sound of me destroying it. You hear that? Bash, bash, bash. I love this gift. Bash, bash.
But that's really, it is a testament to the fact that Back to the Future is sort of a cornerstone, and
yeah,
you know, we're both really into it. And Matt and I have quoted it back and forth a lot too. So I know it's a thing for you too. And so,
oh yeah,
so I'm just looking at stuff we all know. And I'm like, well, this is perfect. Nobody talks about this movie nearly enough.
Yeah, definitely. And it may in fact be my favorite movie ever.
It's way up there for me.
Like, definitely up there. Yeah.
One of the Star Wars movies is probably at the top for me, but after that is probably Back to the Future.
Yeah, once I get into my top five, it's really hard for me to, you know, pick a single winner.
Then you're just thinking of the stuff you're leaving out, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit, I didn't talk about aliens.
Exactly. But the interesting thing, the thing that sort of brought it back up for me recently was apparently and this may be old, but it's new to me, and you guys didn't know about it either, so it's new. The first draft of the film is actually online. You can read it. And we'll provide a link in our show notes. They actually on one of the Back to the Future fan sites have links to the script in various stages of production, like the very first draft, which is almost nothing like the final movie.
And then, oh yeah, it's totally bizarre.
And then the revisions through, you know, you can start to see Doc taking shape. You can see the story coming together. And it's really fascinating. It's so completely different. And Bob was reading it recently. I told him about it, and he went and read it. And
I went and read the first page, and then I forgot about it for a few days. And then just about an hour before the podcast, I went, oh, shit, and started reading it again. And I got about maybe a quarter of the way through
it. Original one.
Yeah, exactly. I was doing both at the same time.
I got to cram for this thing.
Yeah, because our audience really demands that that we all be, you know, completely studied up and ready to go.
Well, yeah, I hope that's so not true.
I only got as far as Doc's pet, which I will not reveal this time.
Oh, no, go right ahead.
Oh, it's the he has a monkey named Shemp. who is sent forward in time. And instead of the DeLorean, it's just a big blinding beam of red light. Well, right, this is not nearly as cool. But...
And actually, the actual vehicle that the light is shined into, shone into, God.
Shone?
Shined it.
The thing that Marty gets into, see what I did there? I'm a professional. is like a big refrigerator. And I seriously, it's like a big...
Is that what it
kids
is?
Yeah. Want to travel through time?
Well, and that's... It's in, like, the stuff.
Lock yourself in a fridge.
It's in the official, like, it's in the behind the scenes, and it's in, like, the... Like, I knew that part. I've heard about this before, and Robert Zemeckis said, well, okay, yeah, maybe we don't want kids trying to emulate this. We better change it to something else. But, yeah, the first draft, right. It was, like, a big steel, or, like, lead... Actually, it was lead-lined refrigerator, because they ended up, near the end, doing the thing that they did in the last Indiana Jones movie, which is using the lead-lined refrigerator to shield yourself from a nuclear blast.
So yeah, that makes really, sense.
Whatever, uh-huh. Whatever you think of that idea, and I've heard it thrown out there as one of the more ridiculous things in the latest indie movie, it did not originate there. Someone else had that idea first. Apparently Bob Gale had that idea.
Someone else had the good sense to not do it, though.
Well, I believe at that point, didn't Zemeckis and Gale belong to Spielberg? So that's really his idea anyway?
Yeah, well, if I remember last night, it's like Steven Spielberg presents Back to the Future, so...
Right, but did he really have
probably,
anything to
yeah.
do with it?
I mean, oh, I doubt it. Aside from loaning them John Williams.
Yeah, no, that wasn't John Williams.
That wasn't John Williams. That was Alan Silvestri.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Man.
No, that started a lifelong love affair with Alan Silvestri.
And apparently, really? Huh. Reading some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, apparently that was his first big good score. Like, they almost didn't get him. They had to sell him, like, to the studio. They had to say, no, we want this guy. He's great. And they looked at his earlier work, and they said, this guy, really?
Well, the stuff he did before that was, like, some kind of almost, like, crappy 80s pop kind of stuff. Was electronica. It wasn't, like, the big orchestral score like he did in Back to the Future.
So he's kind of a Danny Elfman type, where he had his background in more of, like, you know, yeah, like Danny Elfman was in Oingo Boingo, and then he went and did scores.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, I mean, Bob, I know I anytime over the last, you know, what is it, 20 years that we've known each other, I could just call you on the phone, and it's about a 50-50 shot that you're going to have the Back to the Future score on behind you. Like, yes, you are you're definitely a fan of that music. But yeah, great.
Even when we started recording this.
It's true. It's true. I made it, and I'm like, oh, you're at the clock tower. I know that's the score. But yeah, this first draft. It's a refrigerator that he gets in. Mm-hmm. It's not Libyans that come after him. It's federal agents.
Oh, right. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Right. That bit at the beginning where they're talking about the stolen plutonium, that actually pays off, and it's a whole thing.
That sort of didn't come up again after the Libyans drove into that little hut thing.
Photomat. We were talking about this before you came on. Are you familiar with the photomat?
I am not... It's like a little shack where you get your pictures developed, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Exactly.
But they were all over the place in 1985. Like, that was period correct. It wasn't a contrivance for the story. They were all over the place.
What shame the Libyans didn't know about that.
Well, Bob and I were talking about this earlier. Like, we were kind of wondering why they went away. Like, in our little town, I think we can only remember one because we were in kind of a crummy little town. But then they just kind of stopped, you know, like... If they'd made that movie in 1990, they probably wouldn't have been there.
But I mean, that was way before digital photography really took hold. So I was like, you know, what happened to him? Why? Yeah.
And the best I can think is people just don't want to have their pictures developed in a creepy shack.
It wasn't creepy. It was very nicely lit, big open windows. And
come on down to the photo hut where your pictures will be fingered by Cletus.
Well, and I've heard this in other
places. You got real pretty eyes, ma'am.
I've heard this in other places that people back in the day when you know, the only way to get your pictures back was to have someone develop them. All of those developing technicians or whatever they called them had their own private album.
Oh, yeah.
Where they would keep their favorite pictures. And that's just, yeah. And not that moving out of a shack is going to make that any better, but
it doesn't help, though.
No, not really.
No. Wasn't there a movie about that? Like, that thing was Robin Williams, 1 hour photo.
1 hour photo.
That was after my, that was after Robin Williams was dead to me. So,
it was one of his serious roles, but he was like a clerk at Walmart or something. And he kind of stalks this family.
Yeah.
Someone today made a reference to the movie Jack, which I had to look up because I'd never heard of it.
That's a creepy little movie.
Robin Williams plays apparently a child that ages very quickly.
Yeah, he's like a 10-year-old kid who looks like, you know, Robin Williams.
So it's an excuse to do the big story again, but with Robin Williams this time.
Except it's like it's backwards. It's like, you know, the reverse of big.
It's more the reverse of a Jonathan Winters character in Mork.
Right, exactly.
Ork Mindy, right?
Yeah. Well,
they're Orkin, but so that's a good point. But looking up this movie briefly, I saw it was directed by Francis Ford Coppola.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow.
I just like, so really, The Godfather and Jack.
Yeah.
That's your legacy, sir.
All right. And Tucker.
And Tucker, that's true. And talk about your disregarded sort of gems of movies. That's you've been singing that movie's praises for years. And
man, I love that movie so bad.
Matt, are you even familiar with this film?
I have never even heard of Tucker.
Oh, Bob, it's your moment to shine.
You know, it's about this guy in the 50s, and he like tries to form his own little car company, and then gets beaten down by the big three. But you know, it's really inspirational, and it has what's his head and what's her head in it. I'm so bad with names.
Yeah,
at the
I love
moment.
Those too.
Wow, that's you certainly sold him. No, it's based on a true story. Is the first.
What
thing.
Is her name? His wife.
God, I don't know. Jeff Bridges plays the main guy.
Oh, nice. Right.
And his wife is the hot chick who then was later in Pleasantville and
Joan Allen.
The yes, there you go.
Yeah, she played Mrs. Nixon in Oliver Stone's Nixon.
I find her very attractive, but
she is, and she pulls off like she's aged well. Like she pulls off an attractive like 45, 50-year-old. Which is not easy to do without looking like a grotesque monster like Cher.
Or really hard-ass prison warden in Death Race.
You lost me on that one.
No one else has seen that. Okay, no. All right.
I was with you on Tucker,
I like cheesy movies sometimes.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. But Tucker is not cheesy. It's actually a good movie. It was, early 90s, mid or late 80s, early 90s, somewhere around there.
We were watching it in high school. It was like 89.
And Francis Ford Coppola, it's based on a true story, and it's a period piece in the 40s and 50s, so it's obviously kind of, you know, everyone dresses good, and, you know, Finney cars, and it's a nice little...
Yeah, it's just really entertaining, and it's got a really great cast, and there's a lot of cool stuff they do with, like, transitional elements between scenes, and just, I don't know, they just play around with it a lot and have a lot of fun.
And this guy, cool. Tucker, the real-life guy, came up with a lot of ideas that we saw much later in Real Cars, correct? Like, there's a lot of, like, innovations they came up with that the big company, you know, the big evil company sort of stomped on, and then later, like, oh, yeah, that was a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, he was one of the... They were one of the first to, like, try and adopt, you know, seat belts and a padded dash and try and emphasize some of the safety features that were not in some of the mainstream cars at that time.
So to put this in Matt speak, this guy was Tesla, and the other guys were Edison.
Oh, score. Well, I'm all over that.
Yeah.
So now you got
there
it.
There you go. Yeah.
But now it's,
oh, that was easy.
And Jeff Bridges is one of those guys who you think is like, okay, well, he was the dude. That's it. And then you start thinking about it and you're like, no, this guy's been in a lot of good movies.
Yeah. But mostly, though, he was the dude.
Yeah. Now he's pretty much just the dude. But
yeah.
Like, and there's been a joke between Bob and I since as long as we've known each other about the movie Tron, which, and really, for the first and last time, for the last time for Bob, for the first time for our listeners, I hadn't seen Tron by high school. I got the feeling that the ship had sailed, that I've kind of passed that age, that it would be a big deal to me. And I just kind of said, well, it's probably a good movie, but I'm not a kid anymore, so I'm not going to get it. Bob reacted like like people do when you got this great movie that someone hadn't seen, like, oh my God.
Oh my God, I can't believe you haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's like meeting a film major and you haven't seen Citizen Kane, or, you know, he's like, come on, you're a nerd, you like computer stuff, you like, you know, like, what's wrong with you? And so, and then it just became the sort of antagonistic thing. And he would go to such lengths as, when I would come up to visit, if he lived far away, he would slip a copy of Tron in my bag. And I go home and unpack.
What's this?
Did I bring a tape with me? Oh, it's Tron. Nice try, Bosco.
Next time I'll mark porn on the outside and you'll put it in.
That would have gotten me.
See what it is.
I wonder how long I would have stuck with it before I figured it out.
This is the weirdest porn I've ever seen.
That MCP cone is kind of hot, though.
Except for that Tron porn I saw once. Prawn.
Yeah, I revisited it recently, and it's really, it doesn't hold up nearly as well as I had hoped it would.
Well,
so
again,
I
want to be clear that it's not.
It's cool for historical value, yeah, as far as like just the effects, and, you know, the one of the first movies that has a lot of, you know,
yes,
CGI in it,
in
which was pretty crude, but it's interesting historically. Yeah. I mean, for me, because I just like effects and the history and how people do them and that sort
sure.
of thing. So,
I mean,
but for the average Joe, eh.
Well, we're not going for the average Joe. We're going for nerds. And I would almost guarantee that most people listening to this love Tron and are screaming, oh my God, Al, you haven't seen Tron. What the fuck's wrong with you?
At this point, I should probably point out I haven't seen Tron either.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, but you're.
I just picture you doing the invasion of the body snatchers thing and pointing just.
So that's his, if I'm not mistaken, that's his imitation of Doc Brown.
when the pile of oily rags catches on fire.
Well, you know, every science lab has a pile of oily rags just sitting around. It's for
science. you can't have one without it.
Yeah, you got it. I mean,
or else you're gonna put your oily rags.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that noise that he makes.
I'm gonna take off my shirt. I'm sweating profusely.
Good to know.
No, it's just really hot in here. You know, when that I turned off the fan so that you wouldn't hear the fan.
You got those oily rags smoldering behind you.
And the,
smoldering barely
rags.
In the background.
Right. Mm. Okay, so this first draft of Back to the Future, there's a lot different in the middle. It's not that important. Like, it's 1952 instead of 1955. But the big difference is the end, which. Because the time machine's different, there's different, like, they have to go to a nuclear test site to set it off, which is kind of cool. But the big difference, the very end, when he comes back and everything's changed, everything is completely changed. It's like a
really?
Twilight Zone episode.
Really?
Yeah, he breaks his glasses. And, no.
Burgess Meredith shows up.
Yeah, well, I've established.
And they find a recipe book that says to serve man.
But they can't read it because they're Hitler. No, really though, he gets back and everything's all crazy futuristic. Everything's and the implication is that he's inspired everyone with all his talk of the 80s and somehow
so the 80s arrived like 20 years earlier.
Yeah, exactly. And he's inspired the people to move forward, and so he gets back home and it's like flying cars and, you know, I don't remember all the examples now, but it's all crazy future stuff. And, you know, the sort of Twilight Zone twisty moment is there's no rock and roll.
Really?
And I don't remember what exactly he did, but there's no rock and roll. It's his
and
brother.
He drops his guitar.
his brother and
there
sister.
There was time now.
Time enough to play all the songs, all the Chuck Berry hits. No, his brother and sister are like going for their mambo lessons, and like it's this whole
mama
like,
loves mambo.
But it's you know, a world without rock and roll. And he sort of walks off into the sunset, like, with a little gleam in his eye and his guitar, like, well, you know, now I can be a rock star because I can invent this music no one's ever heard. Which
what you don't see is him failing.
Well, yeah, and if you really, it doesn't make a lick of sense. But it's still an interesting, it's a very different ending, and it's kind of interesting in that regard.
Getting the facts from his rock star manager, you're fired.
No, I can't be fired. And of course, that is what 2015 will be like. We're only 6 years away, but fax machines everywhere.
Going to make a big comeback.
Yeah, got to. And of course, the flying car.
I got to tell you, I'm going to be really disappointed when 2015 gets here. And it's not exactly like Back to the Future 2 told me.
Well, you know, there's
I'm particularly going to miss Jaws 23.
Yeah, they're going to have to start cranking out Jaws's really soon.
Well, they got an audience of one, if nothing else. You'll be there for every one of them.
Oh, come on. It's in 3D. Or
you
4D.
Guys got to see.
Until I get my 5D glasses, and that's a joke.
Look
no
how
one's
good the
get.
Shark looks. They got Michael Caine back.
From the dead.
Wow.
Boy. Now I've completely no. Michael Caine zombie in Jaws 19. You've lost me now. I've completely
derailed.
Lost my train of thought again.
They have lost you, but millions of people are going.
Yeah.
So I do have podcasting experience. I think that's where we.
So yeah. Something interesting. We touched briefly on the Libyans, and I wanted to go to this. This is something I've been thinking about for a while now. We were really scared of the Libyans in 1985. If you look, there's and Matt knows this, Bob, you might as well, in Justice League comics of the time, there was a country called Byalia, which is a very not clever anagram of Libya with a crazy dictator and so forth. And of course, Back to the Future has its Libyan terrorists. And in Transformers, which again, I promised I wouldn't talk much about Transformers and I won't. There's a country in season 3, which is very subtly called Carbamia, and it's
are you serious?
Yes, I am, and I will get to that.
Casey Kasem, and I'm deeply offended.
Yeah, Casey Kasem is apparently of Libyan descent and took serious offense and quit the show. But in sort of geek entertainment back then, Libya is everywhere. I mean, Libya. I probably couldn't even find them on a map anymore.
Yeah.
Well, there was the whole thing with the hostage situation, right? Wasn't that Libya?
I think that was Iran.
Oh, well, then I don't know.
There was something with Gaddafi. I know that.
It's just we need to hate this one little country because we got to hate someone.
Well, I suppose that's true. It's just strange because you look anything in 1985, it's Libyans. Those are the guys. And looking now, like who?
I am really amused by the fact that Hill Valley has Libyan terrorists in it. Like this little shithole town, and it's California, right?
Yes.
Yeah, this little shithole town in California has an underground Libyan terrorist cell in it.
Well, in the
that's
heard about
in the previous versions. No, it's okay. In the previous versions of the script, they go into a little more of how Doc Brown got the plutonium and all that, and it was from some research university or I don't remember, but they. It makes a little more sense with that context.
So they heard about Doc Brown's nuclear prowess and went to seek him out.
Right.
Well, I was watching it yesterday, and he's got a van that says like Emmett Brown scientific whatever. So I guess he's basically like an inventor for hire.
Yeah, he's got that little
scientist for hire.
Fuck, best job ever.
Well, you know, you have to know science to do that job, Matt.
Well, yes.
So we're out.
Not science with an exclamation point.
No, actual science with math and equations.
Yeah.
And
the boring type.
Yeah.
The one with the exclamation point is so much more fun.
Yeah, exactly.
But he has that brief little bit of exposition where he says, you know, they wanted me to build a bomb and I gave him a bomb full of used
pinball machine parts.
Yeah, so I mean, he explains
shiny bomb casing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, shining bomb casing full of used pinball machine parts.
Shoddy bomb casing, that's tough.
Shoddy?
Shoddy bomb. Crumb crisp coating. No, but really, I mean, he did mention that, and that kind of brings me to the thing that I've noticed in the last few years. Whenever I pop this movie in, sort of watching it as a wannabe screenwriter, is this is maybe the perfect screenplay for absolute economy of material. Like every line contributes to the story or moves the story forward. Yeah, set it up, pay it off. Exactly. Everything
over
he does,
and over and over.
And it's beautiful because when you're a kid and you watch that, you have no idea. But when you watch it with that in mind, it's like, yeah, she hands him the flyer so Jennifer can write the number on it. And he's got a reason to hold on to it. Then he's got evidence of the lightning storm when he gets to the 50. Like everything serves something. There's no stray dialogue. There's no stray, like everything happens for a reason, but it still feels like an organic movie.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just, I wish I could write like that, and I wish movies were more like that, because they're not. That's all.
Yes.
I was kind of hoping
the things you have said are correct.
I agree.
I was kind of hoping to maybe, you know, get a little discussion going there. But, sorry.
I mean, would you prefer us to like discuss the lack of that in today's films? Kids these days, etc.
Yeah, kids these days with their movies about stuff.
With their McGees and their
McG
and plot holes that you can drive a semi through.
A semi with their flames painted on it that in no way resembles the original. Semi. No, not gonna do it. Not gonna do it. Sorry.
Not that there aren't plot holes in Back to the Future, but
There you go. Are there?
I mean, they're there, but that movie's pretty tight as far as its time travel logic goes.
I actually can't think of a serious plot hole. You guys, can you?
And I've seen, I think I've heard lectures with Zemeckis and Bob Gale where it's just like, where they go over, like, just how all of the time travel stuff and just how it works and how everything ties together.
Sure.
And so it's as far as logic goes, it's pretty tight.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not scientifically, but logically. Like,
well, no, but
yeah. Right. The internal logic, assuming that there would not be a paradox that would destroy the universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Or limited to our own galaxy, right? But no, I mean, really, are there plot holes? Like, I can't think of any off the top of my head. But you both sort of jumped in with that. Can you? What?
Yeah.
I know I had some. A while ago, and I've just forgotten them.
All right, well, if they come up,
keep out of me. My brain is just—it's so crap these days. Anyway, I don't know. There's the big thing that nobody notices that he's gone. I mean, not that he's gone, but once he leaves, there's like all the stuff that happens. Maybe because of him, but then, you know, they don't like make any mental links to him.
That's true. Like at the end when he's leaving and he's all like, when he's like saying goodbye to like Lorraine and George, he's all like, well, I'll see you around. You'll never see me again.
Right.
But even they've sort of got the accent like, well, Marty, will you ever see us again? As far as they know, he's like the new kid at school.
Yeah. And he just flew into town and
disappears into the night.
Yeah.
We used to go to school with this kid named Marty, and for a week he was just great, and he helped us out with everything, and he brought us together, and then he disappeared. We kind of hope he didn't die.
Right. It's true, and then he said this really strange thing about if your kid set the rug on fire, what the hell was that about?
I guess that's, you know, it's not a lot that you'd expect them to cover all of that ground once he comes back.
Well,
to
actually,
the future,
in the novelization, they do briefly touch on that.
Really?
Where it's sort of an extended scene at the end. It's the same scene, but it's longer. The novelization had a great, like, I think it was based on the final draft of the script, so there was some stuff that they cut, but nothing's really different. It's just longer.
Right.
And when I was a kid back when we were kids, Matt, movies took a long time to come out on video, which was the style of the time.
we all wore onions on our belts.
The Kaiser had taken our word for 20, yeah. Yeah, we're just quoting Simpsons at this point.
The Kaiser had taken our word 20.
But between that long period of seeing it in the theater and waiting for it to come out on video, the novel was all I had. So I read that thing 86,000 times.
Sure.
And I remember it pretty clearly. There's a scene at the end where they're talking about how they met or whatever. And Marty says, yeah, you told me a story about a guy who helped you guys hook up. Whatever happened to him? And so, you know, it was a nice little payoff to that. And it's just kind of, well, we don't know. He never came back. Kind of. So that may have been in the original script, or they may have given the novelization guy like some latitude. But
see, and the other thing that's always interested me is just how Marty and Doc actually hooked up. You know, has that ever gone into anywhere?
Well, that's something. Apparently,
I just think it's a really fascinating pair up, these two guys who like each other quite a bit.
Yeah, but a 17-year-old kid and
a 17-year-old kid and an old scientist.
And if the Principal Strickland is correct, he's seen as kind of a pariah, kind of a, you know, a town weirdo.
Exactly.
He's not like the most approachable guy.
I don't think that it's too far fetched. I mean, you know, if he's, I don't know, Marty ends up mowing his lawn or something, and they just kind of talk about something and hit it off. I mean, you know, it could definitely grow from something as innocuous as that.
Well, and actually, that's in one of the earlier drafts of the script. Is
Oh, really?
It says, Doc, like, Marty's talking to Jennifer, and he says, and she says, oh, how did you meet? And I'm glad they took it out, because it seemed kind of forced.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you tell me that backstory? Well, Jennifer, exposition.
Let me just bring up the flashback here. Yeah. Doodly, doodly, doodly.
No, apparently what he said was Doc came to my door one day and asked me to clean his garage and offered me use of his music equipment. And the implication there is it's some kind of predestination thing where Doc knew he had met Marty once already and had to make sure they would meet again and came to his house. And that makes no sense, and I'm glad that wasn't in there.
Yeah. Like, I could sort of see, like, you know, when, like, after he's been back to the 1950s, Doc's sort of waiting for him to show up again. And just be like, sure, come have a look at my music equipment.
Right.
But, like, I don't...
But seeking him out doesn't make any sense, because...
No, exactly.
In the internal logic of the way time travel works there, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
We're meant to, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we're meant to accept the original timeline, the, we'll call it the Twin Pines Mall timeline, as sort of unblemished, as sort of everything unfolded the way it should have without Marty's interference. And then in the Lone Pine timeline, that's everything happened basically the same, but with Marty's interference. And so.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And like I say, if you listening don't know, Marty knocks over one of the pine trees on the farm. And the nice
old
little background.
Old man Peabody's
gag. Farm. All of this. All of this.
Fine. Crazy idea about
reading pine trees.
Three dueling Doc Browns. That's why you tuned in, folks.
Marty!
Marty!
Doc!
You gotta go back!
Doc!
Hey, Doc! You gotta go a little more Canadian with it, Doc. Actually. And that's not a dig at Matt. That's
sorry about your farm.
Yeah. Sorry about your barn. He sounds like the kids on You Can't Do That on Television. Hey, sorry about that.
What happened to it? I don't know.
So, yeah.
We're all just envisioning green slime at this point.
Yeah, we are.
Having a little laugh.
For those of you playing at home, that's what we're doing. What's in our brains. Among other things. No, I've lost
not
it
much
again.
Else at this point.
Yeah. No, it's the Lone Pine thing. It's a nice little background gag, and that movie was good at that. And yeah. It actually sort of laid the groundwork for a lot of stuff I went on and to like later with lots of like The Simpsons and the sort of layered comedy where there's stuff going on if you're really paying attention and
yeah. Or you're watching it for like the fourth time or whatever.
Yeah, and there's still stuff in there and it's like, hey, neat. Like the Statler Toyota is the same as Statler Studebaker or, you know, like stuff like that. It's great little detail.
Statler Horse Barn and
right.
Part 3.
Exactly. And one thing that was pointed out to me recently, Amanda loves pointing out that all the entertainment that I really love, that I truly hold as sort of, you know, the best of the best, has some element of incest to it.
Oh, yes.
I really? Did not realize. I didn't put this together and I wish she hadn't. But of course,
Arrested Development,
Back to the Future. I'm now into these George R.R. Martin fantasy books, which Matt despises, but I'm rather enjoying. And there's heavy, heavy incest in that.
Did you like the Xanth books when you were a kid? Those had a lot of incest.
Hadn't read them, but probably. If
I have to go check them out now.
Yeah, if there's brothers fucking sisters or mothers
incest,
fucking,
you say?
Yeah. But it just never
occurred. Or at least very close to it.
Intriguing. Yeah.
And not like sort of offhanded, oops, I wasn't thinking when I wrote the script, like Empire Strikes Back, you know, like, oh, Leia kissed Luke. We didn't know she was the sister yet. I don't count that. I'm talking full on creepy, you know, it's your mother and she's making a pass at you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I love incest. We'll put that out there. Matt had his little confessional about furries. I think it's only fair.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but what that kind of made me do is compare all the girls that I've dated to my mother. No, compare Back to the Future actually to Arrested Development. There's actually a lot of similarities. There's a lot of like, I mean, there's the incest element, but a lot of the like background gags, like I say, there's a lot of the similarity of, you know, on the fifth viewing, you catch something. And then, of course, there's the chicken thing. You know, everybody calls someone chicken, you know, caw, 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 caw. So I think Arrested Development is just one big tribute to Back to the Future. That's
of course.
That's interesting. That didn't start until part two either. The
it's
chicken
true.
Thing.
It's true.
Well, then they needed that whole sort of, you know,
Yeah, he needs some. He needs a character flaw. We haven't really shown any.
Then he hates being called chicken because, you know, that comes up a lot.
Yeah, all the time, apparently. Yeah. I felt that was a little bit grafted on. I felt like, and actually that kind of brings me to the sequels. Bob, I know you're a pretty big fan of them. Matt, you and I talked about this briefly, that one is definitely the sort of the best. And
oh, yeah.
The others are pretty good. But
I do love Back to, like, I mean,
oh, I love them.
But Back to the Future 2, I am a big fan of also. Just, I really love the sort of plot, like the sort of, just the whole conceit of that, of them jumping around in the back, like the background of the original film.
Yeah,
I
can't think of another time travel story that's really done that. Where you
I love it. I love dystopian Hill Valley,
Hell Valley. Actually,
yeah,
yeah. But
the Biff or Rickle.
Slackers die. Oh.
But the thing,
Bifferific. That's the what
oh,
I was
right.
trying to
yeah,
say.
Oh right, yeah. That's the fan. That's the official fan definition.
Yeah.
But the thing that struck me when I saw it as a kid, and I didn't really figure out what the problem was, it seemed to me like they softened it a little. Because it seems like in 1985, there wasn't a PG-13 rating yet. The PG, you could get away with more. And it seemed like there was a little more edge in the first one. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Where Doc says, you know, you're going to see some serious shit.
We're going to see some serious shit.
And Doc's not afraid to say, I'm going to go find out who's going to win the next 30 World Series. And, you know, like there's a little more, like he seems like a little shadier. And in the other two, he seems a little more family friendly, a little more accessible. And I don't think they watered it down, but it definitely feels a little lighter.
Well, they were trying to, I mean, I guess that's part of the whole thing with like him being chicken. They were changing Doc's character a little bit. So there'd be a little bit of antagonism between the two.
Right.
Just, you know, just for interest's sake, I think. I mean, I guess so, you know, Marty could come to the realization at the end. Oh, you know, it's better to just be in my own time now.
Right.
Well, I mean, I mean, they do set up in the first one that Marty's a bit of a hothead, you know,
right.
when they're in the cafeteria, like, and Biff's threatening him, he's gonna fight him just flat out right there, you know.
Right, and I don't know if they're playing that for jokes that you know, shrimpy little Michael J. Fox is trying to pick a fight with, you know, towering Tom Wilson, but I don't think it's meant to be a laugh, but it is kind of funny because I mean,
yeah.
What are you doing, kid?
They've got the shot where he's just sort of peering over his shoulder and just like you could just barely see the top of his head. He's like, how's it going? Let me just straighten your shirt up there for you. Ah, you look good.
That's true. And thinking about that same scene with it in the restaurant there, when Biff walks in and turns off the record player has been a source of amusement for Al and I for years.
Oh, God,
that,
yeah.
It sounds like somebody's turned off Biff.
he walks in and the music goes down at the exact same time that his voice sort of trails off, and it does sort of it's awesome.
And it's no, somebody turned off Biff.
Somebody plug Biff back in quick. Hey, McFlurr. So yeah, another thing that we And I was trying to figure out where we came up with this, if we discovered it ourselves or if we read it somewhere. Matt, you know, when Marty returns to 1985 and he gets out of the car and the guy goes, crazy drunk drivers.
Yeah.
That bum. Do you know who he's supposed to be?
Yeah, he's supposed to be the mayor, right?
Well, that's
because Michael J. Fox says, hey, Red, like. He's like happy to see him again, right? And in the previous scene, it was like, re-elect Mayor Red, whatever.
Right,
Red Thomas, that's it.
And again, I don't know if that comes from fandom or if we all realize that our own selves watching it so many times and putting together there's two characters named Red. Apparently that's entirely wrong.
Really?
Zemeckis and Gale did a Q&A. It might have been for the DVD, might have been just a convention. I don't know what it was, but they did a Q&A and they were specifically asked, is that Mayor Red Thomas the bum? And they said, no. Where did you come up with that? No. But apparently it's such a widely spread thing, like, that it came up in a frequently asked questions, like Back to the Future fandom. And you know it exists. You know there are rabid internet nerds.
Oh, heck yes.
Who nitpick over, you know, did he arrive at, you know, 10:04 and 5 seconds or 10 seconds, you know, like taking all the fun out of it. And as obsessed as the three of us are with this movie, I don't think any of us do that.
No.
Especially not during this podcast.
No. But apparently it's come up a lot that Mayor, you know, is that Mayor Red Thomas? And they said, no, Michael J. Fox ad-libbed the name Red. Like, the script said something just, like, recognize the bomb as a sort of a staple of the town square and then continue on.
And just sort of not realizing that there had been another red earlier
because
in
shockingly,
the movie.
Michael J. Fox didn't have all the tiny implications of the script memorized. He probably barely memorized his own lines because during the day he was doing Family Ties and at night he was making this little movie. So
exactly.
Probably not first on his mind.
I can't call him that. There's already a guy in the movie called Red.
What
people,
is the internet going to think?
People would think I'm crazy. What will the internet think when it gets invented?
Very forward-thinking man, Michael J. Fox. You know, it's kind of interesting.
So did they say who he was supposed to be? Is he just a random bum? Or?
Well,
just
bum. No, okay. Not random, like well-known, because the whole thing of
a well-known bum.
Right. Well, Hill Valley is a small town.
Distinguished bum in the community.
Well, and the other thing is, I think it's supposed to show, again, Hill Valley is kind of a shithole, you know? Right. Like, there's graffiti everywhere. Well, no, like, there's porn theaters and stuff.
The point of that was that the town square had died. That was sort of a, like, Zemeckis and Gale are sort of that baby boomer generation that grew up with, like, the town squares, and then they watched everyone move out to the suburbs and to the malls. It's not that Hill Valley's a shithole. It's that that area used to be where everything was going on. And it moved away. That's what that's meant to show. Because I mean,
okay.
Because I mean, like, this is okay, and out by the mall is
like,
okay.
I'm watching it last night, and I'm just like, man, there's graffiti everywhere. The school looks like shit. The what do they live? Lions Estate signs both look like shit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and then I'm thinking, like, does that get better at the end of the, like, when he goes back? No,
it doesn't. It doesn't at all.
He somehow
just
improved.
Like his personal life is improved.
Yeah, no.
Thank God I met that kid, Marty. It really taught me to clean up after myself and not spray graffiti on the walls.
Well, it's like that original ending where everything's a utopia.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Marty said, hey, reruns. And that made the future better somehow.
That might be a little fast for you, but your kids are going to love it. What? He's right. Let's improve stuff.
Well, that's all it takes, apparently.
That'll teach me. Now I'll invent the flying car. Thanks, Marty.
I want a flying DeLorean.
Yeah, me too.
Flying DeLorean. Let's see one of those in 30 years. Can't help it. I'm sorry.
Biff. And why is Biff at the house? I mean, didn't he try to rape Lorraine?
Yeah.
This has come up in other discussions with other people. And yeah, like, why would you keep the guy who assaulted your wife right there?
Yeah.
Just keeping a close eye on him.
I guess. And that's George says, you know, I had to keep him under control ever since high school. You mean ever since he tried to rape mom? Like, yeah.
Maybe
it's
that,
just, you know.
Oh, that scamp. Always with his rapes.
Once Biff was defeated, you know, he was just so downtrodden that it's almost like he's kind of become a family pet that needs to be taken care of, right?
I really don't know that justifies giving him work, though, you know?
A world where man rose from Biff? you bastards. Sorry, I'm off.
But you blew it up, referring to the car.
but he obviously, you know, outs himself as completely untrustworthy still in part two when he's like, you know, eye on the flying DeLorean and gets the notions to go steal it and go back in time, and etc. I mean, because he, you know, that's where the seed was planted. Then when he's an old man, he finally sees it and sees his chance to, like, seize his, his manhoodness back.
You have a safe? No, of course you don't. Get a safe!
Right.
This crazy old codger with a cane shows up. He said he's related. I didn't see any resemblance. Yeah, we're just going to quote the movie now. Stand by.
Probably that someday some kid or a crazy-eyed scientist would come by.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Good times. You know, one thing that kind of struck me seeing part two not too long ago.
A bolt of lightning?
What was that?
A bolt of lightning.
Michael J. Fox, of course, has had some difficulties with his health. He's got Parkinson's. He seems to be holding together okay. What's amazing is we're almost at 2015, and even under the strains of this disease, he looks a hell of a lot better than the movie speculated that he would look in 2015.
Oh, absolutely.
I thought that was interesting. Like looking at the makeup of old Marty and looking at Michael J. Fox at about that same age, about mid to late 40s, like he looks a hell of a lot better than they gave him credit for.
Well, I mean, he was also supposed to look like, you know, shitty and downtrodden in the movie. I mean, like,
yeah,
you know, I know
Parkinson's.
He's got, yeah, I know he's got Parkinson's, but like, you know,
but there's a lot of people that love him, you know,
he's dealing with it. You know, he's doing all right for himself. Other than that,
he was on Scrubs a few times. Apparently he's been on some other show that I'm drawing a blank on now, but
he was great. He was great on Spin City back in the day.
It's true. And he's still, like, every now and then he's still making appearances in things. Like he's having a little trouble holding it together over long term. Like, he can't do a series anymore.
Right.
But he's still got it together enough to do, you know, like a guest shot, like a full on guest shot, not like a walk on, but like a, you know, a half hour, an hour role. And he's been great. And like I say, he's held up better than the movie gave him credit for. I thought that was kind of strange.
Mm. Crispin Glover, though.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, Crispin Glover went crazy.
Went crazy.
Yeah.
Went crazy?
Excuse me. Crispin Glover's crazy.
If you listen to the commentary and the interviews and stuff with like Zemeckis, apparently about half the takes with George had to be thrown out.
Like, really?
Crispin Glover's take on the character was completely not what they wanted most of the time.
Really?
Yeah. That's
like what was he doing?
I don't know. I don't have like specific examples. I wasn't there.
what was the story when they went to do the sequels? Then did they just completely not even go back to him and say, would you like to come back? They just like,
you know,
went
I've
straight
been,
to the
didn't he want like a shit ton more money to
read different, like, because doing a little research for this thing, I did a little like reading around, and I've read two different stories, and the internet at least acknowledges that I've read two different stories and I'm not crazy. I guess it's like Zemeckis' side of the story and Crispin Glover's side of the story. Crispin Glover said, sure, I'll be in it, but I want script approval. That's what he says he said.
Uh-huh.
They say he said, no, I don't really want to be in it, but if you want to pay me as much as Michael J. Fox, I'll think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And so basically, I think, this is speculation on my part, they said, fuck you, we can make a great Back to the Future movie without George McFly even being in it.
Yeah.
And they did.
And they did.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you read that, there's a first draft for part two, which is nothing like the movie that we finally got.
Really?
Well, that's not true, actually. There is a bit in 2015, but after that, like after the future part, it's completely different. They go to 1967, and George is like away. he went somewhere. He's off. He went back to his home planet now. But no,
he's over there.
Biff had already killed him at that point.
No, it wasn't that storyline. It was a whole different thing. It was, I don't know how they ended up in 1967, but the gist of it was George and Lorraine were going to two different colleges, and they were supposed to meet up for a romantic weekend and basically conceive Marty. And so you were thrown into pretty much the exact same scenario where if they don't meet up, they can't conceive him and he can't be born. And so once again, he's racing to save his own existence. And I'm glad they didn't go in that direction because they kind of already did that.
Yeah, that's sort of the let's do the exact same thing we did in the first movie thing, you know?
Right.
They were in college?
Yeah.
Wait, doesn't he have an older brother?
Yeah, he has like an older brother and an older sister.
And they handled that. It was like the grandparents are watching them. I don't remember what it was. Maybe George was still in college and Lorraine wasn't. It was covered. Like it wasn't a big gaping plot hole. I just don't remember.
Okay.
But at one point they had written an entire script without like just mentioning George by name, and they didn't even have that sort of lookalike guy to fill in for him from time to time. Like it was that pronounced. They just didn't even put him in there.
Huh.
And they at least backed up a little and said, okay, well, people are gonna wonder where George is. Let's at least show him like as an old man or
he's the same place he always was.
Sort of in the back.
El Valley Cemetery.
March 15th, 1973?
Yeah.
That's a fact that I need to know.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Don't need to remember, you know, like, like my social security number, but got to know March 15th.
At least you know the year George McFly died.
In the alternate timeline.
In the alternate timeline.
when Nixon was elected for his sixth term. Is that what that was?
Oh, no, they just stole that from Alan
Something
Moore.
In the newspaper.
That's another movie that's stolen from Alan Moore. I can't believe it. First Doesn't they steal Watchmen, and then they make Nixon president.
That was the idea I came up with.
All I know is when I get rich and famous, I'm going to create a new company that's called Bifco.
That is a fantastic name for a company.
I love the idea of the billionaire that names the company after like his first name. It's like the LexCo thing.
Yeah, it's true.
And then, of course, Bifco and LexCo merged into Biflex conglomerate. A company devoted entirely to doing evil.
Well, if you look in the background when Marty sort of first walks into the Biff Tannen Museum, there's one of those great little background jokes. There's a sign that says smoking required.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that's the level of detail that just makes me love watching these movies over and over again. Really, though, I mean, and Matt and I were talking about this yesterday. The third movie just doesn't work for me. Like, Bob, I know you're a big fan of it. You like the setting. Really? You like the trains. It doesn't work for me as much. It just feels like we were sort of in this established world and they went way off in a different direction. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I mean, like, I love it. It's still a good Back to the Future movie. It's a great movie, but in terms of the other two, I definitely
think it's the weakest of the three of them.
Yeah, I would say so.
Really? I think two is the weakest of the three.
Oh, man, I love two. Like, I mean, between the three of them, I definitely would rather watch two than three.
Yeah, same here. Hmm. But see, Bob, I can see your argument. Like,
I'm just the opposite.
From a thematic standpoint, from like a writing standpoint, because it was written as one big script and then sort of chopped in half. So two is basically a vehicle to get you to three.
Yeah.
So from a pacing standpoint, from like a structural standpoint, I can see you kind of seeing it as, okay, well, that's okay, but why don't they get to the good part? Why don't they get to act three? You know, so I understand.
Well, I like Westerns too, so that might be part of it.
I like Westerns okay. I just, when I'm watching Back to the Future, I kind of expect to be in a certain, I don't know. It just didn't feel right to me.
Really? I mean, it still felt, I mean, even to me, even though there was that kind of like lack of the technology, I mean, if you go back and look at the first one, aside from a little bit at the beginning and end, there's, you know, no technology in it. It's not in the 50s, right. So it didn't seem like that big of a stretch for me for them to be, okay, it's him in 1885.
Here's the problem, in a nutshell. You don't have the same continuity of characters. You're no longer dealing with plus 30 years, minus 30 years. So far back in time, you're not seeing an older, young version of the same characters. You're seeing their ancestors, and it doesn't click with me as well.
Like, really?
Seeing Biff's great-grandfather is not the same as seeing young Biff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I see. I get what
shot
you're saying.
In the back over the matter of $40.
$80.
Sorry, I really like that line for some reason.
But then you should learn.
$80.
You should learn what the actual line is if you like it.
Oh, well, then please.
No, it's $80. That's all.
Is it?
Maybe it's $40 $80. Canadian.
It was like, what was it? Like $15 for the bottle of whiskey and then $65 for his horse?
I think so. And I figured out...
Because he threw a shoe and then the horse died. And...
Yeah, and that's one of those great callbacks where it's sort of an echo of, well, I spilled beer all over and, you know, now you got to fix my car. Like, it was the same exact... And I didn't realize that for years. So like, hey, yeah. Like, you know, when Biff's yelling at George, like, you know, who's going to pay my cleaning bill? And
very little has changed in the Tannen family over the years.
It's true. And then in the animated series, of course, they contrived, like, all these...
Well,
like,
you know, yeah, and then it's just like
ancient Rome Tannen.
The Tannen clan has been around since the dawn of time, being dicks to everyone.
And Bob and I were talking about this not long ago. I would love to see that show again. I think you said you had some floating on a VHS at the bottom of a pile somewhere or something.
I actually have some on Laserdisc. Wow. Unfortunately, I have no way to play them back.
You have no Laserdisc player, but...
No.
See, what bugs me about those was, didn't they make like the kids the main characters? I don't care about Doc Brown's kids, you know?
Yeah, it's true. But
yeah, they were for the most part.
If you're selling a show to children, I mean, it makes sense.
That's what Marty's for, you know? Like, hey, 16. Kids love 16-year-olds.
Well, but they jumped.
He was in it, too.
They jumped ahead.
But the really great thing, though, was that they actually had Christopher Lloyd as Doc Brown doing like
that was awesome.
Bookends to it.
Do like the science lesson or
science experience. Yeah, exactly.
Wasn't Bill Nye involved with that at some point as well?
He might have helped with the science experience.
I think I'm pretty sure he was also I know Christopher Lloyd was in there. I'm not debating that point, but I think either Bill Nye took
over.
Was
like the
for
science
him.
Consultant or something.
Yeah, no, I think he was physically there. Like, he was Doc's lab assistant, or Christopher Lloyd couldn't do the second season, and he did it then, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that. Hey, kids, I'm Doc Brown. Here's how you suck an egg into a bottle.
What? You go like this.
make sure you use plenty of plutonium.
You can't use enough plutonium. Don't worry, it's available in every corner drugstore. It's fine.
Just set up our little Mr. Fusion device here. There we go.
Be sure your pile of oily rags is a safe distance away from the experiment.
Maybe throw a blanket over that.
if you have time, try to build it to scale and to paint it. If not, it's okay.
Oh, it looks great.
Oh, thank you.
So it's almost like I was thinking we almost should wait, and then I don't know if this podcast is going to be around next year. I hope it is, but really the time to do this whole reflection on Back to the Future will be next year, 25 years.
Is it really? Man.
Yes. That occurred to me as I was thinking, like, that movie's almost, yeah, because Ghostbusters is 25 years old this year.
Yeah.
And next year is, back to, among other things, Back to the Future. Like, we're starting, Bob and I are starting to get to the point, and you'll get here, Matt, where stuff you remember seeing firsthand is now, like, a million years old, and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ.
It was weird enough when the cartoons I watched when I was a kid started coming back.
Yeah, and that, you know, but, like, I remember going to see Back to the Future, and now, what the hell was that?
What on earth was that?
Oh, sorry, that was my dog freaking out at my bird.
Einstein! But no, it's almost...
Oh, Einie.
It's almost 25 years old.
It's awful, awful, awful mess.
Awful, 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 awful mess.
I'm sorry. I'm just totally derailing the conversation at this point.
Oh, no. Now, please stop with the jokes. We can't have those.
What a shame that we lose those.
Yeah, I gotta keep pushing forward to the points that I'm making here.
Damn it, we don't have time for your funny. We have to talk seriously about Back to the Future.
I have a list.
You will not deviate from the list.
But the movie's almost 25 years old. We're almost to the real life 2015. And of course, they were way off the mark. But I've always kind of thought, and I don't want to see a Back to the Future 4. I think they ended at a good spot. And
no, that's that's a big mistake. A 4.
Oh, yeah. And they've all said that. All of them have said that. And I don't want to see a remake, certainly, which seems to be the thing to do right now. But I would love to see, if everyone's still around and everyone's still in good shape, for them to use 2015 as kind of an excuse to, I don't know, do something.
I would love to see a commentary with the original, with like all the cast on it, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
when they inevitably re-release it.
Christopher Lloyd's looking a little rough these days. He probably won't be around much longer, and I hope he is, because he's a fantastic character actor, and he's been in so many good things, but he
how old is he, do you know? About,
I have no idea. Very, very old,
because I mean, he's just looked old for his entire life.
No, he's not Marty.
I thought all Canadians spoke that way. I'm very confused. You sound way too American.
I think we addressed this, and
thanks a lot.
I think you've incurred some kind of penalty actually for making that joke. And once we figure out what that penalty is, once you found our crossbow, that's it. Shoot yourself with it, please.
Yeah,
honor system. Shoot yourself with the crossbow.
Me?
Yes.
Yeah, you.
Oh, all right.
The Canadian thing is sort of off limits.
That was finding the crossbow.
No, you.
Well,
said...
yes, but then I'll mail it to you so that you can shoot yourself with it.
I see. Oh, okay.
And again, honor system. Make sure you take care of that.
Don't not shoot yourself with a crossbow. Yeah. That would be that's unsporting.
Yeah. You incurred this penalty.
71.
See, that was our artful covering while we were looking that up.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. No, but look at that picture of him. Look at the main picture of Christopher Lloyd on Wikipedia. He looks very, very old.
Man.
So 71, you said, right?
Yeah, he was born in 1938.
Jesus H. So
he's currently 70. He'll be 71 this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he
looks. My grandmother looks better than her, and she's 94.
Ugh.
It's rough. He looks rough. But I mean, he's still doing stuff. I know. He still recently apparently did some voice acting. So I mean,
he did that. What do you call it? That Willy Wonka parody on.
That's true.
I remember. Like
Bob,
that was like
that?
A couple of months ago.
No.
Oh my
what is
God.
It?
Oh, fuck, that was hilarious.
That will also be in our show notes for anyone who hasn't seen it. It's Funny or Die. Have you seen the stuff that they do?
Some of it, yeah.
And
there's good stuff.
Yeah, and they get, like, quality actors, like actors you've heard of. They did a reimagining of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory as a horror movie. And Christopher Lloyd plays Willy Wonka.
And he plays him perfectly.
Yeah, that's all we should say. Like, that's the premise. That's enough for you to go look at it.
Wow.
But he's, it's so good. they just posted one today, and I'm going to be dating myself on this podcast here, but they posted one today that's a G.I. Joe thing.
Yeah, I just watched that this morning.
And did you spot all the people in it?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Buster from Arrested Development was Dr. Mindbender.
I saw that. God, that was weird.
Julianne Moore was Scarlet, and
ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
All kinds of
really?
People. Yeah, you got to read the credits, because it's like all kinds of... Alan, I don't know how to say his name, Tudyk? The guy who played Wash.
Oh, Wash.
Yeah, the guy who people say I look like, and I don't think I look
Alan
like
Tudyk, you don't look like Wash.
I don't think I do either.
Yeah, no, go back and look at A Knight's Tale. He looks a lot like you there.
You're saying go back as if A Knight's Tale is something that I've seen once.
Go revisit A Knight's
Tale. No, I mean, like, go back in time and go see A Knight's Tale. It's really fun. It's a really fun movie.
All right.
No one believes me.
No.
It's really great. I mean, the whole premise is it's set in the past, but it's with like kind of anachronistic music and a few other things. It's a really neat mixture.
All right. This is total. I'm trying really hard not to get us into, you and I have famous drawn out long arguments over this is good. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. And that is going to be such boring radio that I'm not going to bother.
I don't know. Arguments make for pretty good radio, I think.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
See what I did there?
You guys are tearing me apart.
I don't like it when mommy and daddy
fight. Don't go breaking my heart.
Oh, boy. So here's a segue for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just post that in all kinds of places. One thing I noticed recently, actually watching Back to the Future, watching the very, very brief. What the hell's going on over there?
I'm sorry, I was dropping.
Did somebody stab you?
Spiky.
The easy way.
Exactly. I was dropping very pointy things upon myself.
Well, don't do that. That's what you have a pile of oily rags for.
to cushion the fall of the pointy things?
I guess. I don't know. That wasn't the joke I'd hoped it would be.
No, so, but I enjoyed seeing it again.
Yeah. Watching the first one again recently, the very brief scene where George is peeping in on Lorraine changing. I swear to God, when I was a kid, and when I went to go see this, I was 10, I think, and my grandmother took me to see it, and I swear that was full-on porn when I was 10.
Oh my God, she was naked!
There was boobs, because I was so ashamed and embarrassed and awkward, and I'm with my grandmother, and she's like, well, what is this movie we're going to see? Like, don't worry, it's a fun family movie. And then, so my 10-year-old brain thinks there were boobs in it, and she just like, oh my
there's
God!
Incest and boobs.
Yeah, exactly. And I go back and look at it now, and there's like 3 seconds of Sears catalog bra.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe how bad.
This is like 1898 era Sears catalog.
Oh yeah, or indeed 1955.
or that.
Yeah. And there's a joke not long after that that Bob, you had to point out to me that I would never have gotten, which is where he goes, where are my pants? And she goes, over there on my hope chest. And I didn't realize that was a joke. I did not realize that your hope chest, because not being a girl preparing for a wedding, I never knew.
Not knowing what the hope chest is.
That the hope chest is where you put things that you one day hope to have. And wow.
Ah.
So
yes.
Well, it's putting away things for your marriage later
right.
on.
Right. So the implication of putting his pants there is that she wants his body.
That would explain the what do you call it? The delivery of hope chest too.
Right.
It's like over there. On my hope chest. I hope to have your pants soon.
Yeah, and then her mom says, are you up there? And she says, quick, put your pants back on. Like, wow.
It's my mother.
So she took
the
pants
look on
off.
Her face when she says, it's my mother.
Yeah.
Never saw anyone with purple underwear before.
It's written all over your underwear. So there we go then. I think...
Back to quoting the movie.
I think, yeah. I think we've pretty much covered every possible in and out of this movie that we can.
Yep.
Although probably not.
I'm sure we will return to Back to the Future at some
point. No doubt. I just, every now and then I walk around going, re-elect Mayor Goldie Wilson. Progress is his middle name.
Yeah, he's going to be mayor. Mayor!
Is it you that loves that line, or was that...
That's my brother. It's my brother's favorite line.
That really all the all the clever dialogue in that movie.
All the clever dialogue in that, but his favorite thing. Yeah, he's gonna be mayor someday.
Now, is that one of those things where you're sitting up at 3 a.m. watching this movie and you kind of back it up over and over again, just like giggling furiously?
Yeah, probably.
You know what I mean?
Just like, well, I mean, he like he watched that the first time when he was like, I don't know, like 5 or something. Just because I was watching it when I was like 10 and just sort of hooked onto that.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, I can't even think of how many better lines there are than that. But
oh, yeah.
But that's
still... But I will always enjoy that line.
Fair enough. I mean, I've always said, and Bob is actually the sort of the test audience for this belief that if a joke makes someone laugh so hard that they can't breathe, then you know it's a winner. You know that's a keeper.
I have a lot of people that kind of breathing while laughing thing.
I also go by the if you can get someone to spray something out of their nose, it was a pretty good joke.
True. True.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Nobody's spraying anything out of their nose with that joke.
All right. I'm glad we agree on that.
I didn't even think that was a particularly bad observation. It just suddenly got really quiet.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, shit, he's talking about spraying stuff out of his nose again. Oh,
it always goes back to the nose with you. You got this nasal fixation.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't he know? My grandparents were killed by a nose.
Wait, what? Now you're just being silly.
So I think we're about done with this.
Yeah, I think that about wraps it up. Bob, thank you for being here.
We will
briefly be answering letters from listeners, and if you wouldn't mind sticking around for that, if you could assist us in any way, helping disseminate some knowledge and wisdom, we'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Bob's real name, I address him as Bob. His actual name is Mark Bosco. You can visit his wonderful website where he posts blog posts and short films and all kinds of fantastic stuff. Stationinthemetro.com. And
sometimes it's actually interesting. Yes,
it's often interesting. And you have an incredible design sense. If nothing else, it's a pretty site. If you don't update it for a year, it's still beautiful to look at.
Why, thank you.
That was not a backhanded comment. He updates it a lot. I really did not mean it to sound that way.
Every once in a while.
You can follow him on Twitter as Bob Tiki, T-I-K-I. Mm-hmm. Bob loves the tiki stuff. And he's a fun guy to follow. He's into tech stuff. He's into tiki stuff and incest, apparently. So there's that.
Well,
no, that's you.
Can't say that.
Oh, right. That's me. Right. I
that's you.
Anyway, Bob, thanks for being on. Love to have you back. And
absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to be here.
Matt? As always, appreciate your being here.
No problem.
And that was maybe the most lackluster thanks I have ever given you. So with that,
Matt, I'm glad that
Matt,
you...
it's
Matt. It okay certainly to was. Have you on the show?
Matt, you're
it
still
certainly
here.
Was a time I spent talking with you. Let's try as hard as we can to avoid that happening again.
Next time, be funnier.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Okay. Our first letter comes from Scott Zioko, friend of the show. We plan to have him on shortly. Independent comics maker, all around funny guy. And he says, my right earphone keeps repulsing my left earphone. What can I do to get them to kiss and make up?
Gentlemen? I think you'd have to turn one of them around, I think.
Now, repulsing how? Like, is it disgusting
kind of
you?
Is it some kind of a magnetic thing? Maybe?
Yeah, are your earbuds actually trying to escape from your ears? Because if that's the case, you might want to try just taping them in.
Well, see, here's the problem with this sort of forum. He's not here for us to ask for that sort of give and take. So we're going to have to lock in an answer, and you're just going to have to say something. So what do you
crap
say?
Bob?
I'm going to say super glue, because I worked for the gorilla with the hard hat.
Yeah, sure. That sounds fine.
The gorilla with the hard hat? Wait, what?
Wait, maybe that was the Samsonite commercial. I think I'm
could
mixing
we could we maybe go into more detail about the gorilla with the hard hat?
I think we should.
Yeah,
I think
wasn't
what...
it that there was a super glue that had glued the hard hat to a giant I-beam suspended above many stories above the street, and there was
if
maybe
I may.
Wasn't it a gorilla?
Excuse me, yes. If I may. Crazy glue, strong enough to suspend this man hauled in midair.
Yeah, that
not,
I know
yeah,
about, but
not
a
super
gorilla?
Glue, crazy glue.
I think I'm mixing it up with the Samsonite commercial in which the gorilla attacks the pieces of luggage.
And now in my head, I'm also picturing Coco the gorilla cupping Shatner's balls.
I love you, Coco.
It's a simple actor's trick. All right, so yes, it worked for the gorilla. It may work for you, Scott. On to our next question, which comes from Sleep. That is not his actual name, but also a longtime friend of the show. We only have three episodes, but we have longtime friends of the show, believe it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And he says...
Wait, I missed it. What is his not actual name?
Sleep.
Sleep!
On the message board...
I thought you were just saying a generic noun.
No. On the message board where we post, he briefly changed his name to Sleep the Poster, and he would often refer to Sleep the State of Rest to distinguish between the two. So he is well aware of the potential confusion, and that has been addressed previously.
But, oh, good.
Sleep asked for his actual name not to be given, and so Sleep it is.
All right.
And Sleep has a couple of questions for us. One of them is, why doesn't Graham, the name Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M, rhyme with Abraham?
Well, my middle name is Graham, and
is it really?
Actually, yeah. Well, I pronounce it as Graham.
Do you do that on purpose, just out of spite, or
no? It's just how it's been since the dawn of me.
I think it's for the same reason that W O R C H E S T E R is spelled Worcester, is pronounced Worcester. Excuse me.
And that reason is
because it's people? British.
The English are jerks. Very well.
When I was inventing the English language back at the dawn of time, I wanted to make words that were harder to pronounce so as to fuck with people from America when they started making movies and my comic books.
And who are you, please?
Alan Moore.
Yes. And
you'll have to tell me, Al, was Alan Moore in The Story of English when you watched that in high school?
Oh, God.
And the inventor of English, this hermit from Britain.
Who worships a snake. Very
it was
briefly,
like this 23-hour PBS special.
Yeah, very briefly, my English class in senior year of high school, we watched this PBS special, and it was, I think, more than 23. Seriously, it was probably 40 or 50 parts called The Story of English. Wow. And it went into every tedious detail, the history of, I think it was like the history of every word in the OED is what it was. Just one at a time, A, okay? Aardvark, all right? And that was my senior year of English. Good memory. So, the next question comes from also Sleep, and he asks, "Dear Al, did the guests field listener questions? Please discuss with guest."
Well, guest, what do you think?
In my experience, they do.
All right, then.
Moving on.
That's certainly not an incorrect answer. And I can't really fault you for not coming up with a funny one, because I can't either. So, our final couple of questions come from... how does he want to be addressed here? I know him as Beav. His real name is Rob.
Like Jerry Mathers?
Yes, exactly like Barry Mathers. No, Jerry Mathers, not Barry Mathers. All right.
I said Jerry.
Yes, I didn't.
You said Barry.
I did. I'm always doing that.
Barry.
Right. Much like that.
Yeah, that's a Tick reference for the nine people in the audience.
If you're doing an obscure joke, I'm all for you. I thought you were just being weird and like that didn't work. But if it's an obscure reference, I approve 10,000%.
Especially if it's Tick reference. Away. We're always happy to have that. We're always happy to have those.
Yeah, we're go ahead.
The episode with the other Tick, whose actual name is Barry.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, I thought you said Tech reference.
No.
Like, because you know technical things that we don't know. I thought you were going to say
technology called Barry, apparently.
Sure.
Yes.
You know, in 1985, Barry's available at every corner drugstore.
It's how you make barymetric readings.
It's like we have Dave on all over again. So, Beav, as I know him, his name in the email is Rob Comics. I don't think that's his actual last name. But actually, I'll throw in a plug for him. He runs a blog called Talkin' 'Bout Comics. He's sort of actually a couple years older than us. Just got back into comics not too long ago. I can claim responsibility for sort of leading him back. He came to the Pittsburgh Comic Con with us, and was so won over by what he saw that you met him, Bob, but you don't remember at all.
I was feigning that I knew him.
Right, of course. And I apologize. I've now completely made that awkward when it shouldn't have been. But no, he runs a great little blog, and I do not have the link handy. I will throw it in the show notes. That is becoming the repository of things that I can't think of.
Well, that's the point of show notes.
I suppose it is.
Indeed.
All right. And he writes, 1, the furry that Matt dated, was she a sexy squirrel or a sexy fox? I think those are the two options,
I think I can
right?
answer that.
Yeah.
Let me finish the question first. The furry that Matt dated, was she a sexy squirrel or a sexy fox? I think those are the two options, right? Although Cindy Bear has always struck me as kind of hot.
I will tell you this right now without going into too much detail because I'm afraid of her, you know, coming for me.
We don't want you to give actual personal detail, but yes, we do.
She was really, really into Pikachu.
Right?
Yeah.
And see? Bob, I think whatever information you have probably supersedes Matt. So what do you got?
I was definitely going to go for the sexy Barracuda.
Really?
Because those are pretty furry, right?
Oh, yeah.
Are they?
And you get the extremely erotic theme song to go with it.
Ooh, Barracuda.
And of course, great bit of show continuity there. That's why things didn't work out, because Matt hates the sea and everything in it.
It's true.
Moving on. Rob Comics says, Limpid is Warner Brothers, not Disney. Isn't it?
No.
Added to make a question.
Mm-hmm. No, Limpid was Disney.
And I was going to go to Wikipedia or IMDb to verify this, but it occurs to me we need to set precedent here early on. What we say is fact, and that's that. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. Look, we do a ton of research before every one of these, okay? Like, we're not stupid. We know what we're doing.
It's true. You should see the notes that I have here. They say, what do they say? Christopher Lloyd, incest, fax machines. Those are my notes. I mean, I'm prepared. I'm a professional.
You can't argue with that.
It's true.
You just can't.
It's true.
No.
No?
No.
No, you can't argue with that.
Oh.
I'm agreeing with Rob.
Oh, you're agreeing with Rob. You think it's Warner Brothers?
I don't know. Well, no, that's not what I meant at all. I'm disagreeing with Rob.
What I'm saying is, are you disagreeing with the show? Because this may...
No, I completely agree with the show.
Okay, good. You've,
excellent. So
the show is correct in every possible regard.
Fantastic. That may...
How else do you think we got a podcast? They don't just hand these out to everyone.
It's true.
Damn right.
I mean, Matt was slaving away as a felt baron. And
we had to go through a rigorous training process before we could even download Skype.
It was maybe the most rigorous thing I've ever done, and I've done a lot of rigorous things in my life.
Yes.
Wow, that died.
The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is published weekly and is available via iTunes or on the web at algar.com. Detailed show notes, related links, and alternate file formats are also available on the web. That website again is Algar, AlGar.com. Follow Matt and Al on Twitter. They are, respectively, @RobotMatt and @Algar. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com. An on-air response is guaranteed. All material contained herein is the intellectual property of Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and the featured guest unless otherwise noted. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions, copyright 2009.
He was a suburban child of the 70s.